Talk given Sunday, 16th July 1972.
I think it would be very useful today if we start with a little meditation upon the body, one's own body. Let the mind quietly rest and sense the body for a few moments. Let the mind be well aware that the body is a thing of sensation, and try to investigate what that implies. Relate it to our actual senses and the sense functions. Now, what does one notice in connection with the fact that the body is a thing of sensation? And what does sense functioning bring about or raise up in our own minds? See, the first thing to bear in mind is sensation is generally of two kinds: pleasant, unpleasant. Sometimes it is just a neutral feeling, neither pleasant nor unpleasant. That we need not consider at the moment. There are pleasant feelings or unpleasant feelings. Through the functioning of the senses. And as a result of those bodily sensations, there arises either attachment to the pleasant ones, usually, sometimes even to the unpleasant ones, because one feels they are very exciting. That's another form of pleasure again, though. Either attachment to pleasant sensation or aversion from disagreeable, unpleasant sensations. The psychical complex of I like, I dislike arises. And that conditioning starts right from our childhood, and it is rooted in the body, remember, hence the importance of the body and the body mechanism. Starts right from our childhood and becomes more and more intense as we grow older and older. And it is the overriding conditioning factor where our perceptions of all our experiences are concerned. This I like, I dislike. If I like, I want to acquire and possess. If I dislike, I want to be rid of it, get away from it, or if necessary, destroy it. So you see, this complex arises and interferes with what is perhaps the major constituent which distinguishes us as men and women, as human beings, namely the functioning of the human mind, the human intelligence. This is one thing which we must very clearly bear in mind. If you are really alert and at the same time calm and watchful, then with every single functioning of the senses, whether you see something, hear something, taste something, whatever it is, you will find that it is always related to your own body and the conditioning that the bodily senses, sensations, have put upon your mental processes with regard to every single perception. You see? If there is no body, there is no living at all, there is no person at all. We tend to forget this overridingly important fact when we talk in terms of, oh, my body is this, but my mind is like that. No, not at all. This separation between body and mind bedevils the whole process of our growth, our natural growth and fruition right from the start. This is a conditioning from which we must become free. And one can become free only by constant watchfulness. For example, take a concrete case. You're standing in the street waiting for the bus, we'll say. There's traffic passing by, people passing by, all sorts of things happening. Just note what happens in the mind as these sight impressions and sound impressions reach us. Just note what happens. And how all that happens, the mind relates back to the body in a very subtle way. The sense of body as separate body becomes intensified. And this means an intensification of the self-center to which we cling and to which we are bound. And it means also an intensification of all selfness. Because the I like, I dislike complex is working at full efficiency whilst this process is going on. What is the result of this? Increasing conflict, strain, and tension within ourselves. See, you must really get hold of this fact, not only intellectually, but really sense it. Get the feel of it so completely that you really know it. When you really know it in that way, you will find that you become freer and freer of any bondage to this psychological I like, I dislike counterpart of the physical sensations which are pleasant or painful. The physical sensations one can never be rid of, and in fact one shouldn't try to be rid of, because they inform us, tell us what's going on. And it would be dangerous for the body to be deprived of this sensitive mechanism. But the psychological I like, I dislike is the villain of the piece and causes all the trouble. Now remember, This is all rooted in the body. If there were no body bearing my name or your name, I or you simply don't exist at all. There isn't a mysterious floating entity called mind or soul or spirit flapping about in the ethereal spaces with a little label attached to its, what shall we say, its mental shoulder with our particular name. It just cannot be. If that could be the case, you could just as easily attach a little label to a particular portion of space, put your name upon it, your nameplate, nail it on. See if you can. See, this is something which we must remember very, very carefully. We as conscious beings, in the manner in which we are conscious, are such simply because there is living body. Don't forget that. Now, what sort of consciousness is ours? By virtue of living body with the different senses functioning as they do, and the intellectual processes attached to it, the analytical intellectual processes attached to it, what sort of consciousness do we have? It is a discriminative consciousness. It discriminates this from that. And this discrimination needs the analytical process. But because the I like, I dislike complex plus this analytical process is overwhelmingly prominent, we remain unconscious of all the relationships between what appear to us irreconcilable, separate things. Or, if not irreconcilable, unrelated, separate things. Now, as long as we are unconscious of complete relationships, we are always bound to take sides with this or that, which means conflict. And that conflict means a state of unease in the mind. It's a diseased state of the mind. One cannot perceive truth, then, in anything and everything when the mind is in that state. So we must be quite clear that all that constitutes us and which we perceive analytically, to give the simplest analytical mode of presenting it, it's a body-mind organism. Or, if you like to take a more complex analysis, or shall I say, a more extended analysis, you can say that there is body, rupa, as we say in Pali, shape or form. There is vedana, sensation, feeling. There is sanya, the thoughts, the perceptions. There is sankhara, the complex of ideas and so forth, and vijnana, discriminative consciousness. One can produce any sort of analysis, after all, that depends upon the way you approach the whole situation and what you perceive. Any analytical presentation into 4, 5, 3, 20 parts is just as good as any other analytical presentation. So all this is there as long as there is living body, the living body. But note carefully, the mind separates them out and thinks of them as different. Feeling is different from body, thoughts, perceptions, etc. are different from body. And consciousness itself is something totally different, we say. Is that so? This is what we must really look into. Is that the fact? Now, consider very carefully. Could you have a thought minus living body? Could there be discriminative consciousness minus living body? Could there be living body without sensation? Without thought, as we call it. Without discriminative consciousness. You see, they are all one complete whole. And the word body in itself stands for the complete whole, if we only knew. You could just as well use the word perception or mind or soul or whichever word you like to represent the whole. The important point I'm trying to suggest is this, that if we are aware all the time in terms of wholeness, then we are whole human beings. Otherwise, we are fragmented, we are split up, broken up into bits. It is convenient to have the analytical presentation. The simplest, of course, is body and mind. You can extend it, say body, feeling, thoughts, perceptions, add anything you like, discriminative consciousness and so on and so on. Or you can use St. Paul's body, soul and spirit. You can use any analytical presentation. But in the analytical presentation, don't get deluded into thinking that these are separate entities and can exist independently of each other. Now, this is very important. You see, wholeness means health. Well-being. Wholeness is holiness. The pure, complete, total being. Now, let us see what happens. Let us assume that we have that enlightened state within us. Just let us assume it. In the ordinary way, when we are not in the enlightened state, the sensation comes, physical sensation, and there is attachment or aversion. So, certain other factors come up. Due to the attachment, as it becomes stronger and stronger, there is craving, tanha, greed, possessiveness. Because of the aversion, there is fear, violence, hate, disruption, and so on, isn't there? Isn't that the case? This is what happens when there is no wholeness. And once the craving is there, once the violence is there, well, I need not expatiate upon it any further. We all know the state of the world. We all know the state of our own lives. And this is the more important thing to consider. Why is it the more important thing to consider? If I am a lame man, I cannot run and save that baby who is just about to get run over by a bus. I need both feet and good, strong, fleet feet in order to do that. So if I'm not whole, I cannot put the world to rights and make it whole or holy. I could only make a holy mess of it, yes. That's if I'm in the unenlightened state. Now, if I am in the enlightened state, which means that the sense of wholeness functions utterly freely and completely in me, then, when the sensations come, there is neither attachment nor aversion. There is no splitting up of a whole into its component parts, and then the subsequent statement that the parts are not related to each other. None of that takes place. The experience is gone through in fullness. So I'm constantly learning. I'm constantly not acquiring anything. I'm all the time being free of heaping a burden on my head and my shoulders. Now you see the importance of this. But if my fundamental disruption within myself, this is body, that is mind, that is feeling, that is sensation, that is consciousness, is there, I can't do that. I can't be whole. Now look at the body. Body is whole. Not merely as body. It is body, sensation, feeling, thought, perception, consciousness, everything. Or, as I said earlier, start with any point in the story, and that particular thing, say sensation or perception or consciousness, is all the rest also. Because that particular thing, as analytically presented, cannot be there unless all the others are also present. You see, those of you who are keen students of Buddhism should remember this point very carefully when you study the Paticca-samuppada, what are called the 12 nidanas or the 12 causal factors that make up the whole cycle of suffering and sorrow. They are not 12 separate factors. They are all there simultaneously. If any one of them is out, the whole lot are out. You can, if you like, take a rather rough and ready analogy from the body. I have a brain and a heart, and so on. If either heart or brain were not there, there'd be no me. There'd be no body. Quite impossible. See, it's like that. Now, something further. It is not enough to listen to my words or anybody's words. It is not enough merely to go through an intellectual, logical process by yourself and then deduce, yes, this is so, that is so. What Firoz said, or John Brown said, or Jesus Christ said, yes, that's perfectly true. We may say it logically, we may be quite sincere about the matter when we say it, but it avails us practically nothing. Why? Because we are perceiving that as a thing apart from ourselves. We haven't put out a sensitive feeler towards it and become one with it. Now, this is the important thing. The living creature is a sensitive creature. His sensitivity itself all along the line. And our conditioning and all the rest of it has all the time curtailed that sensitivity, which is the unfortunate thing. For instance, if I see a tree or a flower, how do I see it? As something separate from me. Physically, as we ordinarily say, of course, the tree is over there, and I who am looking at it am here, true enough. But if I am intensely sensitive to what I am seeing, what happens? On its own plane of psychical sensitivity, that flower and I have become one. On its own plane of psychical sensitivity, that flower and I are one. Now it's the same with seeing truth. The intellect has that kind of sensitivity. If the intellect can really be wholly sensitive to what it is perceiving, it becomes that which it is perceiving. When Jesus said, "I and the Father are one," that was one of the supreme expressions of this sensitivity functioning to its fullest extent. The Father meaning transcendence. And a little more specifically, if you are well versed in the Kabbalah, you will see that the Father represents wisdom, Chokhmah. The Father in heaven, Abba, in heaven, is this second Sephira of Yahweh, known as Chokhmah, wisdom. That's the fascinating part of it. That the Lord of love and the God of love whom he preached is actually wisdom. Chokhmah. So, this sensitivity. Now, we have to become wholly sensitive to the fact that body is the whole thing. Or if you like, spirit is the whole thing, or consciousness is the whole thing. The stone is consciousness. Or if you like, consciousness is the stone. There was an Indian poet, Harindranath Chattopadhyay. I read this about 40 years ago, so I'm not quite certain, but I think he presented it, he used this phrase with regard to stone, ensculptured consciousness. Absolutely terrific phrase. Ensculptured consciousness. There you are. You see, the poet's vision and the poet's genius allowed the truth to come forth, flash forth in verbal expression like that. But this is sensitivity which we human beings have. Now, we have always talked about, oh, the spirit is all pure and perfect and so forth, or God is this, or the teacher is this, all lovely stylized picture of perfection, a statue which we put into the shop window in order to catch the unwary passerby and make him disgorge his money. We have talked like that. And what does that talk represent? Our ignorance and our foolishness. We've made God or perfection in our imperfect image and stuck it in the shop window to be sold. Money changers in the temple of the Lord. Those who sold, what is it, doves and various things like that. This is what we do, in actuality. Now, why don't we start at the body end, instead of starting at the postulated, fanciful, spirit end? Because our senses indisputably convey the fact that the body is not exactly perfect. Isn't that so? Now, is it imperfect, in fact? We'll say, of course, yes. I lost an arm in the war, therefore obviously the body is not the perfect body. Or I suffer from such and such disease or incapacity or whatever it is, obviously the body isn't perfect. Yes, that is so. In the ordinary way, and quite a justifiable, natural statement to make. But one can look into it a little more subtly. It is imperfect also, not only in fact, but also because I desire it to be different from what it is. Now, the real imperfection is in my desiring. But notice how the desire is linked up with the fact of the body. I've lost an arm. And so my desire accordingly functions this way. I desire it to be otherwise. But if I desire it to be otherwise, I'm in the state of conflict, and a useless conflict. Because if my arm has been lopped off, no amount of desiring will ever grow it again into the full arm. I can, of course, with modern appliances, get some sort of substitute which will partly compensate for the lost arm. True enough. But in my mind, I shall everlastingly be in this state of resentment against the fact of life, that I haven't got an arm. So you see, we don't start at the body end, because the body imposes a restriction upon how we shall regard things. We must be totally senseless to regard the smashed up or totally diseased body as, oh, perfect, wonderful, beautiful. Obviously, that is so. We needn't argue the point. But now, supposing we start at the body end, in order to be sensitive to the fact that body is whole body, now, if we get to that stage, we shall be at ease living in the body in the world. That is the first thing. But something far more wonderful is going to happen. And what's that? Being wholly sensitive to one's own body, as we call it, makes that sensitivity go outwards to include every other body. And by body in this context, I mean every other object, whether we name it animate or inanimate. Look how people express this unconsciously. Captain of a ship refers to his ship as she. The ship is a real live she to the captain. How does a great violinist feel towards his violin? It is not a dead object for him. It is as alive can be. And it is part of his body. See the symbolic expression of this spiritually at the transcendent level when Jesus said, "Eat of this, for this is my body. Drink of this, for this is my blood." Blood meaning that which is the stream of life. It is the blood which means the life stream. So now, what is the meaning of body? Is it not the total manifest universe? Now, this may be an attractive thought to some people. Leave it at the realm of attractive thought, and we haven't gone a step further, really. But if it has become a real living sensitivity, and we are conscious of this, through that sensitivity instead of a mere thought, then our whole life is transformed, isn't it? If I am sane and healthy and a decent person in the ordinary way, do I ever try to hurt my body? My own body? No. If I am sensitive like this to body, which is the totality, can I be harmful to anything or anybody? You see, the I like, I dislike psychological conflict is completely gone. One is in the enlightened state. One is in the state of transcendent love and wisdom. Because one is in perfect relationship with what is conveyed to the senses functioning in this body as different things. One is in complete relationship, and in that state there is real beauty and health and holiness, perfection and wonder. You see the meaning of body. If you see the meaning of body in this holy way, you will also equally easily be at home with the meaning of spirit or mind or anything at all in the full and the holy way. And in that is your total and complete fruition and fulfillment. And from this point we can go on a little bit further. Transcendence is all. The totality and the innumerable particulars making up that totality are in complete relationship all the time. Transcendence or the totality manifests its totality, its transcendence through the particular, the finite. Since that is so, then that statement you find in the Upanishads, which you find in the New Testament, "Know ye not that ye are the temple of the Lord," becomes a living reality for us. Then we can never abuse the body in any way. Eating, drinking, squandering one's energies, any sort of lust or folly is completely out there, just naturally. Because one is the Lord, awake to the fact that the Lord is in the temple of the Lord. Now, all this is not just a vague or airy-fairy idealism. It is a real fact. And it manifests in mysterious and wonderful and uniquely beautiful ways through each and every single human being. If each and every single human being will try not to obstruct this functioning of transcendence through the individual. Now here, we can relate this to yoga and to astrology. The person who specifically treads the path of yoga in the sense of the path of power, the most dangerous path, which should be really one should not attempt it until, as I have said so often before, there is the harmony of love and wisdom within one, until there is the basic purification. But once that is there, the yogi is one who knows how to utilize the body as the storehouse of power in both aspects. The limited measurable aspect, which science can measure, and the unlimited immeasurable aspect, which is transcendent mind in action. And transcendent mind in action, itself formless and shapeless, releases forms and shapes in the realm of particularity, in the realm of manifestation. The realm of particularity is your own body. You see? Is your own body. And your own body fulfills a unique and an indispensable function in life on the earth. If you wake up to that, you will never experience the misery of what is the use of my existence on the earth. I don't do any good to anybody and this and that. Life is not worth living. All that will just vanish away like a absurd cloud. You won't feel that at all. So that's where the particularity comes in. Now, the body as... The body as a storehouse of physical energy has to be utilized rightly. And this is where the purificatory preliminary discipline is indispensable. Now, the next question which arises is, how does one become aware of transcendence at play through you, transcendent mind? Because it's shapeless, it's formless, it tells no story, it has no message on its own level. Now, the horoscope, as we call it, is your mandala. You know the meaning of the word mandala. It's a design, a pattern, either pictorially or sculpturally or whatever you like. That is called a mandala in India. It's a design which speaks its own language. It is a design which tells you both about your own psychophysical being, and it is also a design which tells you how transcendent mind, transcendence itself, will manifest through you. In telling you what you are as a psychophysical being, it can tell you so much about your constitution, your health, your mental capacities and your character and all that kind of thing. So it tells you so much about yourself as a psychophysical being. So it tells you your possibilities and your limitations. Now, this is where intelligence comes in. You must not regard the limitations as something to get rid of. Regard the limitations as those stimuli which will most fruitfully bring out your capacities and bring them to flower. That is the way to look at it. That's as far as your psychophysical being is concerned. As far as transcendence is concerned, the horoscope is a mandala, a design which tells you what modes of awareness, of consciousness, are most likely to be predominant in you and function through you. Are you of the wisdom type? Are you of the love type, the beauty type, the energy type, etc., etc.? I'm giving only the secondary or tertiary stages. One can't give the primary stage because that is the unspeakable. But it has everything to do with the uttermost deeps of your consciousness, of universal consciousness as it functions through your living psychophysical organism. Now look at the importance of body again. The mandala, which is the horoscope, is the perceptual counterpart of the mandala, which is your living body. You know that several of the Indian temples are designed upon the mandala of the cross-legged yogi in meditation. That is how those Hindu temples have been built. That is how many of the altars are constructed. That is what they are supposed to represent. Now, I'm telling you this today Because, as you know, in the modern world, yoga and astrology have become, unhappily, like so many other things, the new intoxicant, the new little excitement, the new little drink. Man is a wonderful predator. He is a wonderful debaser of everything. It is for people like ourselves. If our real concern is religion, is truth, to realize truth within ourselves and thus become centers from which that truth may influence the environment. Don't try to shape the environment or control it. That's a mistake every time. I'll use Jesus' words, be perfect even as your Father in heaven is perfect. That's the whole task. Because you are the whole world. The whole world is you. And you as you cannot start from the whole world end. You can start from your end, which is the whole world. And you are you because of body. Your body. So neither be attached to the body, nor hate the body. Neither pamper the body and indulge it sensuously, Certainly, let all the senses be alert and functioning fully. Be sensible to the fullest extent. But don't wallow in sense indulgence. So don't indulge it. Don't repress it and hurt it. That is the individual problem, of course. No one else can help you there. You alone can do that. Because it is your body which is functioning. Somebody else's body can't function on behalf of your body. That's where personal self-responsibility comes in. So you see, this body is the starting point. And in its finishing is the totality. Is perfection, is fruition, is fulfillment. And in that is real happiness. Not the gratification of any craving or desire. That is the thing which destroys happiness. I have said again and again, the crown of our physical existence, of our psychophysical being, is happiness. So be happy that way.